Rick Stevens, financial advisor with FRS Financial Group, offers securities and investment advisory services through Waddell & Reed Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA and SIPC, and a federally registered investment advisor. FRS Financial Group is a separate entity from Waddell & Reed. Insurance products are offered through insurance companies with which Waddell & Reed has sales arrangements. The information presented on this show is solely for information purposes and is not to be construed as an offer to sell or the solicitation of an offer to buy any financial product or service mentioned. Waddell & Reed does not offer tax or legal advice. Please consult with a professional prior to making any financial decisions. Any opinions expressed are those of Rick Stevens and may not be the opinions of Waddell & Reed. The information is subject to change based on market and other conditions. For more detailed information regarding any of the topics discussed on today's show, please call 719-500-8700. This is Money Matters, presented by FRS Financial. Here's your host, Rick Stevens.
Well, thank you for joining us and welcome in to Money Matters, presented by FRS Financial Group. I am Rick Stevens. I am your host, and this is your show. If you have topics you would like to hear discussed, please let us know. Feel free to give us a call at 719-500-8700. You can also shoot me an email, rstevens@frsfinancialgroup.com, or you can just go to our website, frsfinancialgroup.com, click on that contact tab at the top, scroll down, send us a question, send us your message. We would love to hear from you. Well, folks, this week on Money Matters, I'm going to jump up on a little bit of a soapbox. We're going to talk about some of those financial fallacies that are out there in our world today. And there's a, I'll call it a boatload, right? That's a technical term. There's a boatload of fallacies out there when it comes to things in our economy. If you are one of those folks that are on social media at all, you may have seen some of the memes floating around that have some of these fallacies in them. If you listen to some talk radio shows, there are some of those shows that have the guests on coming on and promoting some of these economic fallacies. Sometimes they're blatantly false. Sometimes they're just outrageous statements without any data. And sometimes the statements are just made to inflame, bring those emotions up, place blame someplace it doesn't belong. So that's where we're going today. Now, as I'm getting ready to climb up, though, onto this soapbox, I want to start with a critical thinking question for us, right? That question we need to be asking ourselves anytime somebody makes an outrageous claim. And that's, what are they trying to sell me, right? What do they want from me? Do they want my money? Do they want my support? Are they sowing dissent for some reason? What is the motive, right? Why are people saying these sorts of things? I'm going to start by tackling something that I just drives me up the wall. I've seen this so many times in the last couple of weeks. And it's about real estate, right? Now, we know that the real estate market in El Paso County has been pretty hot here for a few years, right? Average home prices are going up. And a few weeks ago, we covered with Kyle over at Fisk Mortgage that real estate truly is local. When it's happening in El Paso County, it's because of things in El Paso County, right? There's nothing right now going on in New York that is affecting us. The prices we see increasing here aren't increasing at the same rates in other local places. It truly is a local issue. And the hottest markets across the country from 2021 really are across the country. There are several that are in the Florida area, but that would make sense because there's no state income tax, a great place for retirees to head, right? The cost of living is not exorbitant. So here we go. Yahoo Finance giving us the top 10 housing markets based on the increase in the average home price in 2021. Number 10 is Jersey City, New Jersey, where home values across the board were up an average of 24.5%. Number 9 is Port St. Lucie in Florida. Home prices up 24.9%. 25%, almost 25% in Port St. Lucie. Vero Beach, average home price is up 25.7. Number seven on that list is Phoenix. Average home price was up 25.8% from the year before. Salt Lake City is number six. Not a surprise to any of us that have friends or family out there. Average home price up 26.2. Punta Gorda, Florida, up 27.5. Ocala, Florida, up 29.7. The number three hottest market in the country in 2021 was Boise, Idaho. Average home price up 31.5%. Number two, Naples, Florida. Average home price up 32%. Number one, Austin, Texas. Average home price up 33.5%. Now, the claim that I keep seeing, though, is that BlackRock, right, an investment company, is driving up the price of real estate by buying all the houses on every block, quote-unquote, and turning them into rentals. So, folks, I want to look at some facts here. Let's look at actual data. So, from 2015 through 2021, BlackRock, the company, acquired about $20 million in properties across the country. As of November last year, all the residential property across the U.S., total value of all the residential property, is about $45 trillion. That's trillion with a T, right? A million, million. So to put those two numbers in perspective, I'm going to wipe out those first six zeros. So the claim that BlackRock is buying all the houses on every block and running up the prices for everybody is basically saying that they're $20, right? Because we wiped out those six zeros, so it's not 20 million. Now it's 20 bucks. They're 20 bucks is manipulating the value of everybody else's $45 million. Now I don't know anyone personally with $45 million, but I'm pretty sure that the 20 bucks I have is not going to value, change that on anything that they have. Not one bit. They couldn't care less about my 20 bucks compared to their $45 million. And then we have to ask ourselves this. Where are the bulk of those purchases happening? Well, for BlackRock, 22% of the homes that they invested in were in Atlanta. If you remember our list, that is not one of the top 10. Another 22% were in Charlotte. Again, not in our top 10. 20% were in Phoenix. Okay, that is a top 10 hotspot. In fact, Phoenix came in at number 7. So let's focus in on that just a little bit. 20% of their properties, right? So roughly $4 million. Right? If they have 20 million, 20% of 20 million is $4 million bucks. $4 million in properties purchased in the Phoenix area by BlackRock. In 2021, over $1.2 billion, a billion with a B, in residential real estate changed hands in Phoenix. So the BlackRock purchases accounted for 0.4%, 0.4% of the sales. Folks, BlackRock is not driving up home prices. Whoever is telling you that has something underlying that they're trying to get at. So let's just think of these things critically. The other thing I want to cover before we head into our break is this thing, and I see it popping up more and more again now, is that Amazon doesn't pay taxes. That's not right. It's a major company. They make billions in revenue. Why aren't they paying taxes? I've seen that from industry people. I have seen that from politicians. And I'm here to tell you, it is blatantly false. And if anybody tells you Amazon doesn't pay taxes and it's not right, ask them to prove it. Because more often than not, they can't. They don't know how to prove it. They just know they heard it from somewhere and they're parroting it back to you. And all you've got to do is say, they're a publicly traded company. Go to their website. Look at their investor relations. Go in there and find the financials. You can find them annual. You can find them quarterly, and you can find them for as far back as they've been a publicly traded company. Find me the proof that they're not paying taxes. Because, folks, I will tell you this. I have been to the Amazon website. And if you find their income summary, if you go to the annual income summary, and they have not yet published their 2021 data. However, their 2020 data is available on the annual side anyway. It is available. 2021 is available quarterly. You can look and see precisely what's been paid. So, if we go to the last four quarters, which would be the year 2021, in March, in that first quarter, Amazon shows income tax paid of $2.1 billion. Then, in quarter two, they show income tax paid of $868 million. Because these are all based on the pre-tax income for that quarter. In quarter three last year, so the quarter that ended with the end of September, they paid at the end of September for 3 months $1.1 billion in tax. And at the end of December, for that quarter, their sales were actually down in December last year. They paid $612 million in income tax. Don't let somebody tell you, well, they're not paying their fair share. Because I'm here to tell you this. The folks that are out there saying that Amazon doesn't pay tax haven't looked at the financials. That, by the way, because it's a publicly traded company, are readily available to the public. They have to be. It's a law. They can't fake this information. All it takes is for somebody to go look it up, find it, and see that, yes, income tax is being paid. That's all it takes. It takes 30 seconds of effort. Well, folks, we are up against our break. When we come back, we are going to continue talking about some of these financial fallacies that are out there, things that we run into, whether that's from some talking heads some places, whether that's internet memes, whether it's just a buddy of ours that we're sitting down having coffee or lunch with. I want us to be able to face these fallacies and flip them over with the facts. So stick around, folks. You don't want to miss where we're headed next. Stick around, everybody. Hello, everyone. Rick Stevens here with FRS Financial Group. Are there questions that you have about whether you will be able to retire with the lifestyle you want? Maybe you have an old 401k and you don't know what you should do with it. Has it been an addition to the family and you want to start saving for their college education? Or maybe you have a question about life, long-term care, or Medicare supplemental insurance. Whatever your questions may be, give us a call at 719-500-8700. That's 719-500-8700. And with FRS Financial Group, we are here to serve your best interests because we want to see you succeed every step of the way in your financial journey. Whether you're nearing the end of your working years, just starting out, or anywhere in between, if a dollar touches it in your life, we can help. Give us a call at 719-500-8700 to set up a time to get together. And remember to tell us that you heard about FRS Financial Group on KRDO. And don't forget to tune in to Money Matters, presented by FRS Financial Group on Saturday mornings at 9 a.m. wherever you listen to KRDO. Investment services offered through Waddell & Reed, Inc., a separate entity, Waddell & Reed Incorporated, member SIPC. Well, folks, thanks for sticking with us through that break. Rick Stevens here, your host on Money Matters, presented by FRS Financial Group. And today we are talking about those fallacies that folks out there are throwing about, talking about our economy. And we're just getting right down to it with the critical thinking and the facts. One of the things that I heard the other day as I was driving around in my truck was a commercial talking about how there's a major recession coming. Now, I've heard this from one source or another every year for probably the last 10 years. Oh my goodness, we're going to have a major recession. Oh my goodness, a major recession is coming. We're due for this. We're due for that. Right? Chicken Little, the sky is falling. It's all doom and gloom and everything's going to implode and run for the hills. No, I will tell you right now, no, not the case. Right? Everybody out there wants to be the person who successfully predicted that the recession was going to happen, that the collapse of this, that, or the other was going on, mostly because they're probably going to try to write a book about it and make money from you. So when we look at the world of economics, we can look at it from two different perspectives. We have microeconomics and we have macroeconomics. Now, I used to teach both of those courses, right? Microeconomics focuses on local economies, state, county, city, right? Focuses on that small little vision. Macroeconomics focuses on the big piece, the country, the region, globally. Two different perspectives on that. One at that small home level, one at the larger, you know, think things like U.S., North America, the world. But I also want to remind you that macroeconomists, the guys looking at that giant picture, they have successfully predicted 9 out of the last 5 recessions. Right? So just think about that for a moment. Successfully predicted 9 out of the last 5. So there are, in my world, 12 different economic indicators that we look at that are really, when you take them as a whole, very predictive of what's coming next. 12 economic indicators that we look at to see, hey, are we proceeding with caution here? Does the economy look like it's expanding, or does it look like it's headed for something recessionary? And we break those into 3 segments: the consumer, business activity, and financial. Right? And in that consumer segment, we look at things like housing permits and job sentiment and jobless claims and retail sales, wage growth. Those are the different pieces, the different indicators we look at in there. And we look at month over month on this. We look at what happened in December compared to what happened in January, what happened in November compared to what happened in December. And when we look at these month over month, only wage growth is in that stagnant space, right? That what could be a recessionary indicator. Every other indicator, housing permits, job sentiment, jobless claims, retail sales, they all show an expanding economy. In the business activity segment, the pieces we look at there, commodities. This piece called ISM New Orders, which basically means it's the manufacturing sector. Okay, the new orders that are coming in being placed with the manufacturing firms. We look at profit margins and we look at shipments. Now, even with the supply chain issues that we see, all 4 of these are showing positive, expansive growth month over month. All 4. Nothing in the business activity segment is recessionary. So when you hear people talking about, oh, businesses are collapsing and they can't do this, that, and the other, no, it's actually the other direction right now. Right? Right now, in the business activity segment of this, we're seeing expansive growth. That final segment that we look at, the financial segment, the indicators we see there, and we use 3 of them, they are credit spreads, money supply, and the yield curve. Now, each of those 3 things are probably very foreign to most folks outside of the finance world, so we're going to talk about that a little bit. What is a credit spread? Well, what a credit spread is it looks at the difference in the yield or the interest rate, you can think of it like that, of bonds that are a similar length, meaning it's a 5-year bond, a 10-year bond, there are 8 years left, there are 22 years left, whatever the case is, similar length with different ratings. Mostly what we're looking at is we're going to make comparisons between corporate bonds and government bonds. Typically, lower rated bonds, which would be your corporate bonds, pay a higher interest rate. And those higher rated bonds, the government bonds, pay a lower interest rate. So we look at what is the spread between what you can get on the higher risk bond versus the lower risk bond. The higher rated, lower risk versus the lower rated, higher risk. What's the difference between those two? And we actually track that on this thing called basis points. Now, 1% is 100 basis points. So a hundredth of a percent is 1 point. So if there's a 1% difference, that's a 100 basis point difference. If there's a 2% difference, that's a 200 basis point difference. If it's a 3.5% difference, that's a 350 basis point difference. The credit spreads right now are such that it shows growth in the economy. We also look at the money supply. The money supply is how much money is actually in circulation inside the economy. Typically, the more money in circulation, the better. Now, we can overproduce and have too much money in circulation, which is one of the things that the Fed does as they raise the interest rates between banks. Those banks start to raise interest rates toward consumers, and we pull back the amount of money out there because people aren't borrowing as much. Right now, the money supply is in a cautious state. Okay, not an expansive, but a cautious. However, with the Fed likely raising rates several times over the next couple years, it can very well move the money supply back into an expansive state. And that last piece is a yield curve. Right? The yield curve is just a graph. If you think of something that slopes up and to the right, but there's kind of a little curve that makes it flatten out a little bit, that's our yield curve. Okay? And what that does is it measures the length of the bond and how that interacts with the growth of the interest rate on it. Typically speaking, the longer the bond, the higher the interest rate because of that risk of an entity's inability to repay. But we typically see a much higher slope headed up in those first 5 years, and then we watch it flatten out for years 10 through 30. Right now, our yield curve is in such a spot that it shows expansion. Right? So your 10-year notes are really not much better than your 30-year notes, or not much worse at this point, because it's basically flat between 10 and 30, which means we're looking at the likelihood of continued expansion. So what do we learn here? Well, out of our 12 indicators, only two show caution or a recessive segment. The other 10 show expansion. So let's answer that question. Will there be another recession in the future? Well, yeah, there will. The economy is cyclical. Recessions are normal parts of a cyclical economy. Is it imminent? Well, my crystal ball hasn't worked for a while. It's over in the shop, and I can't really give you a good answer to that. But what I can tell you is the indicators say that we're not near a recession at this point. Right? The indicators show this is not a recessive environment. Don't listen to the folks trying to sell you something because, oh my goodness, the world's on fire and it's all going, you know, south in a handbasket. Not true. The last one that I want to hit on here that I have come across actually in the last week or so, I have seen people sharing a post that says something to the effect of, I can't believe we're paying entry-level workers the same that we're paying our teachers. I don't know what these people think a teacher makes, and I don't know what these folks think an entry-level individual makes, but numbers are never shown. So here's what I want to go over. just in our local economy, right? My daughter just took a job. She'll make $14 an hour working after school. I'm going, hey, that's pretty good. I made $5 when I was a kid. If, and that's a big if, she worked a full 2,080 hours in a year, which she won't come close to doing because she's working after school, she'd get paid a little over $29,000. Here's what our school districts are paying first-year teachers. District 49, just over $39,000. District 11, just over $40,000. District 12, over $42,000. District 3, over $40,000. District 20, $42,000 and some change. District 38, $36,000 and change. District 40, or District 2, $41,000 and some change. District 8, $46,000. And District 23, $34,000. What that means is every school district is paying anywhere from 17 to 58% more than somebody at an entry-level position. Please, please, please stop people who are spreading the false narrative that entry-level workers are being paid better than teachers. It's simply not true. Well, folks, that's all the time we've got for today's show. If you want a little bit more depth of understanding, if you want to talk about any of those financial memes that you see out there, the financial falsehoods being spread, give me a call, 719-500-8700. Happy to talk about those things with you. If you've got questions over anything else, feel free to do that same thing and give us a call at 719-500-8700. We're happy to talk to you about things. Folks, we're going to be back again next week, continuing to talk about your money because your money matters. Thanks for tuning in, everybody.